Hey guys, I'm Mark Potter. Welcome to another episode of Brushstrokes, a podcast powered by Canvas Magazine. Guys, today's episode is brought to you by the Association for Print Technologies. I'm not sure if you guys know, but the Association of Print Technologies, or AP Tech for short, is actually the owner of Print 19. Print 19 is obviously a traditional industry show, and this year's show is back in Chicago. It's at McCormick Place North, and it's October 3rd through the 5th. And this year's show will have your traditional equipment and good stuff and technology to see, but they're also changing it up a bit to be a little bit more creative, a little bit more stimulating, a little bit more thought-provoking. So make sure you visit printtechnologies.org and sign up for Print 19, October 3rd through 5th in Chicago. My conversation today is, in fact, with AP Tech's CEO, Thayer Long. And I was thrilled that Thayer agreed to do this because we're kind of kindred spirits. I think you'll get a kick out of him. He's kind of a spiritual guy, a thoughtful guy, and obviously someone who's in love with the printing industry, but is also in love with the idea of changing things up. He has a real knack for strategic innovation and is applying that to AP Tech. And one of the things that he's trying to push with his members is that we really need to embrace this new progressive mindset, that we've got to let go, if you will, some of this survivalist instinct that permeates our industry. So the conversation is a good one. He and I have developed a really nice relationship, and I just thought it would be really cool for you guys to hear some of his insight and remind you of how thoughtful they are over at AP Tech. So without further ado, give a listen to my conversation with Thayer Long. Is this my friend Thayer Long?
Hey, Mark, how are you doing, man?
I'm good. How are you?
I am well.
Although it just started pouring rain, so I'm watching. I've got this beautiful little tree outside my office, and there's a cardinal who just built a nest in the last few days, and I've named her Roxy. She's sitting out there, probably
birthing it.
Yeah, probably birthing some eggs and sitting on the nest. And, I haven't seen much. You know, the cardinal, the male is red and the female is kind of a brown. And she's cool looking too. But the male comes around. But, he doesn't come around much, which is, it's just like a guy. It's just like a guy. He knocked her up and.
Is that right?
It's actually pretty amazing. I'm not like a bird guy, but I mean, this is kind of cool. It's happening right out here. And he'll come while she's building the nest. And I saw it a few times. He feeds her. And then while she's sitting on the nest, he brings her food. It's pretty cool. So, pretty diligent. It's a lesson for all the gentlemen out there.
For all the gentlemen out there. Well, if you're a real gentleman, you're not going to get them knocked up without at least,
That's right.
So I'm actually looking at the radar. I see you're getting some storms. I've got a baseball playoff game tonight. And, yes, they were calling for rain. It's like, damn it.
I know. We've had a couple of days in a row where it's been really, really nice. And it's been like 70 degrees. So it's not hot. Yeah, it's been really nice. But. I'm supposed to do this today. Although I think in the next few days it'll probably clear up. But anyways, how are things?
Things are moving along. Things are good.
Yeah,
no complaints here, my friend. No complaints. So I've been working on a business plan and have been incorporating some of the ideas and things that we had talked around a couple weeks ago. So I'm trying to put a little bit more meat on that bone, and things are good.
Yeah.
How about you?
Good, busy. I mean, you know, everything is, when everything is deadlined, I mean, it's a good place to be, you know, in life where you, everything, you know, you can run a business and there's deadlines and projects. And so rather than, so that's a nice thing. So it's a good combination of having to take the initiative and doing that. But it always, you know, when the summer comes or where some of the team starts to take vacation, I mean, you know, everything is due. So we're humming, but busy. So that's a good thing. Good problem to have.
That is a good problem to have. I have noticed it's been a noticeably quiet since right before Memorial Day, just in general, hearing from members and from other people, it's been quiet.
Yeah, I wonder why. I wonder if that's just the summer and a school. You know, that could be it. I mean, there's different times during the year that it ramps up. This might be that time when everybody's getting, schools are all ending and or have ended, and so that could be a part of it. But
I think that's part of it. And then I think also for us being, you know, at least our industry or our corner of it, it seems to be sort of the early part of June is the last of the industry events and meetings. You know, until after Labor Day. So I think that could be part of it as well.
Yeah. Well, listen, I'm thank you for doing this. I my podcasts are all little casual conversations, and I'm been really lucky to have some cool people on, and I thought, you know, you and I have spent some time together now and kind of have some synergies, kindred spirits, if you will. And I thought, you know, we've had some pretty deep conversations, and I thought it would be a good chance for us to pontificate a little bit, but also to share, you know, give the listeners a little taste of you and AP Tech and what's that all about and kind of your view on the world. And you know, I think it's fairly similar, but some of the stuff that you and I've talked about has really sparked my interest in talking about progressives versus survivalists, which is, you know, overall an enormous theme or issue to wrestle with. So, I just thought, you know, we should chat a little bit and talk about everything that is there.
Everything that is there. Okay.
Yeah, we'll call this podcast Being Thayer.
Being Thayer. Oh my goodness. I'm not quite sure that your listeners could stand it. I don't know if I could stand it sometimes.
Well, yeah, Being Thayer. Yeah, that's right. I can't remember, there's this thing like called Being Steve, and so
something Being John Malkovich.
That's right. Oh yeah, that's it. That would be cool. So and we saw, and the guy, they somehow occupied his body or were seeing things through his eyes or something like that.
I got to admit, I think I saw that movie when, I don't know when it came out. It has to have been at least the 90s. And well, I think.
Yeah. And I think you're right. I think that's what we'll, you know, and so that's what we'll do. We'll say seeing the world through Thayer's eyes. But anyways, but let's talk about that. So, I mean, as you're business planning, you know, obviously you've got a, and I'll get to this. I want to talk a little bit about you and AP Tech, but right off the bat, you know, you're planning for obviously the annual show. You've got other meetings. You're talking to members. You've engaged traditional members, new members. Your phone rings off the hook. You're constantly talking to people. And so as your mind is racing, what do you think is the biggest issue? What is the thing that every day you get up and you start to think to yourself, you know, this is the challenge. This is the challenge in our industry.
Well, I think the just developing a new way of thinking, a new attitude, a new worldview, a new paradigm. There's so much enthusiasm and passion for this industry, but a lot of it, I think, sometimes I feel like it's misdirected, because a lot of the passion and the energy is, and it's misdirected. It's well intended, but misdirected. So it's misdirected because everyone wants to kind of still talk about what we used to do or how what we used to do still has relevancy in today's market. And, there's some truth there, but it seems like that's kind of what we're really still focused around. I just was reading the story about, is it Nordstrom's that, discontinued its use of direct mail and, has been quoted, for paying the price. And, I've seen all these kind of industry thinkers like latch onto this and say, look, print isn't dead and catalogs are coming back. And, the answer is no, not really. I mean, yes, there's a little gossamer that they're pulling out of this one story and how it kind of makes us all feel good. But, how long is that really going to last? I mean, there was nothing in that story that said, Nordstrom's is going to double their investment in print. So it's sort of this, unfortunately, this issue that it's like a whirlpool that we're kind of getting sucked into. And it's a narrative that is, it's good and it's a feel good narrative, but I don't think it's sustainable going forward because, ultimately the forms of print as we know it and have defined it, that pie is shrinking. Mm-hmm. And the only way that printers are growing, if they're going to not, unless they're inventing new print, the only way printers are going to grow, the industry's going to grow, is by developing new print that hasn't existed. But what's still happening, and there's still too much of this happening, is the only way I can grow is by taking something that my competitor has. So it's that zero-sum game. And that works. I think we're industry sort of stuck in that, and no one really wants to talk about that.
Right.
I think that's the biggest obstacle, the biggest, at least one of the biggest obstacles that we have to overcome, and somebody needs to take the lead on it.
Yeah, I was reading a. I've read a book. In fact, I sent a book to Ken by Bernadette Jiwa, and she's got a one of her books where she talks about there's different ways to put it, but she says there's the competition based company where the company is focused on winning. It's all about winning. It's all about beating the competition. It's all, so in that vein, what you're talking about is you've got companies out there that say, look, I'm just looking at the competition. I want to beat them. I want to have more market share. I want more sales. So I'm going to win this job. I mean, we take it right down to the job. I want to win that quote. I want to win that job. And that's one focus. Now, another way to put that might be they're very, very product oriented. And this is what we make. This is what we do. And so win, 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 win. So when you're defined by that product, when you're defined by what you create, the next thing is to go out and try to dominate and beat and win the day, if you will. And so the other side of that coin is what she calls a story-based organization. And that might be a way to say that you're more market-based or you're focused more on the people that you served. You're defined by the people that you served. And so she likes to say, if you're story-based, that you're not necessarily the hero of your story, that your clients are the hero of the story, and that the creation of a story means that you're actually trying to go out and listen and talk to people and flip that around, and then eventually your response is relevant to them. And so it's a very, very different focus. I mean, we can talk about it's the purpose, it's the why. But, you know, this probably goes a little bit to what you're talking about, you know, when you say a new way of thinking. And am I, is that right?
Well, it's right. Exactly. So if we're going to, if any industry defines itself on this is what we do, and how can then what we do fit into what you need? Sometimes there's a mismatch because what you do may not be what your customer needs. I think you and I had talked about it's like being in the railroad business. You know, I'm in the railroad business. This is what I do. I'm going to be defined by being a railroader, versus being in the transportation business, because people still needed to get to point A to point B. They just had a different way of doing it. Mm-hmm. And so if you focus on what your customers need versus what you can do, and kind of trying to fit that square peg in a round hole, it's going to force you to evolve is what it's going to do. And that's actually probably why people don't want to do it, because it's probably pretty hard to do. It is pretty hard to do, right?
Yeah.
That means you have to continually adapt, and you have to go out and listen to your customers. What are their challenges? How can you be a solution provider to that customer? And that means because their needs are going to change, right? Their challenges are going to change. The solutions you provide are going to have to change. And that's hard. That's hard to do, mm-hmm. right? It's easy just to say, I produce widgets, and I'm going to sell widgets to people that need widgets. Well, what happens when they don't need widgets?
Mm-hmm.
So what happens? And then you're kind of stuck.
Yeah.
And, you know, all industries and all businesses, right? You've got to continue to find the relevancy, but relevancy is going to be defined on the customers you serve, first and foremost.
Yeah.
And what their needs, wants, and desires are. So it is a different way of thinking.
Yeah, it is. It's hard. I mean, you're right. I think that it's not just this industry, and we've talked about it. I mean, you and I have talked about it before, and we've preached it in Canvas, and we've talked a little bit about, you know, I always go back. I always tell the story of a long time ago when my son was skating. I remember they're doing these races, if you will, or they weren't, I don't know if they were races. They were just telling him to go through the cones down the sheet of ice. And there were two lines. And so naturally the inclination is to compete. And I said to my son, the first time he did it, he fell down. This was early in when he started skating. And I pulled him aside. I said, "Hey, I got a secret for you. Don't look over. Don't look at the other guy." And, you know, certainly, because when he did that, he was losing his focus. And I said, if you look over, just focus on your stride. Just focus on how you're doing things. And then ultimately he became, you know, one of the fastest skaters. And so, you know, I use that analogy because we are so focused on what we do, you know, we're printers or we execute on this, and then it just becomes about winning the job. It becomes right. about results, you know?
Well, and in that example, and I've given my son a similar example where, you know, he's constantly trying to, you know, compare himself to other baseball players and their talents. And it's like, no, just focus. You got to focus on being the best baseball player that you can be, and don't worry about what others are doing, but we can't help it, right? We can't help it, and businesses can't help but kind of adhere to this herd mentality, right? Which kind of gets us into this whole area, this whole other area of the industry where especially in times of, you know, misery loves company, and especially in times of stress, you know, it's like the herd almost comes together closer. Right. Because think about it. I mean, I think it's biological, neurobiological. Right. Back in the days when we were, you know, when we were not necessarily top of the food chain and we were out in the savannah and, you know, you had to be part of the herd, mm-hmm. you know, or else you were, you know, a meal. So it's like so as our industry's kind of gone through this big change, you know, you know, you've actually seen more of a herd mentality kind of being created, because it's like there's this hope that, you know, man, if we can all sort of just keep doing the same thing that we've been doing and everyone's doing it, then maybe somehow I can kind of survive this thing.
Right.
Versus being the brave soul or company that says, screw the herd. You know, the herd's running, but it's gonna run off the cliff. You know,
right.
It's that herd of buffalo that's running off the cliff. I'm gonna go somewhere else.
Right.
Because, you know, talking about the same old thing, talking about, you know, what I can do versus what my customer needs, you know, that's just, there's a short lifespan.
It's crazy.
That model.
Yeah, it is crazy, because it's almost cathartic, right, to be able to say, stop focusing on winning the same game everybody else is playing.
Exactly.
And go listen to people. And it, because it's enriching on that level, and it may not pay in the moment. That's the other thing, right? We're a slave to that,
right.
To, you know, the immediate gratification. So, and as you talk to members, I mean, you hear it and see it, right?
I mean, it's right. I mean, and think it's so liberating. And actually, you know, there's a lot that we're learning here at AP Tech about it too, because there's, you know, we're an 86-year-old company or association that has had essentially the same kind of product offerings that we've offered for the, you know, past 86 years, and we're in this process now of divesting ourselves of some of those product offerings, because we've kind of lost our focus on sort of what the market needs and what we think the market needs and what customers need. So I can tell you, it's so liberating, because it gives us to think differently. It gives us this whole sort of blue ocean, you know, landscape that we can gravitate towards to build something new, to really listen to customers and to members on what and new customers that we're trying to attract. It's totally liberating. It really is. You know, it's a rat race if we kept on doing what we've been doing. It's just a rat race. It's that zero sum game that the industry's stuck in. And when it's a zero sum game, that's not a fun game to play.
Mm-mm.
It really, really isn't.
Right.
You know, because even if you do win here and there, I mean, you know, when does it end? It doesn't really. It never will end. Right.
Yeah.
You're just gonna try to figure out how you could do something better, faster, cheaper, that industrial age type mentality. Whereas if you go out and do something that no one else is doing, you know, that's unique. That's your unique strategic capability.
Right.
Something that no one else can do. I'm sure that's it for you at Canvas, right? You're developing something here that, you know, on the surface, people might say, oh, you're just publishing a magazine. I can do that. Right. But you've got secret sauce that you've built into it that's unique and different. That's really, really hard to replicate. And so that's divergent thinking. That's getting away from the herd. That's creating value. That's, you know, that's where I think.
Well, and I think, you know, this idea that, you know, being a survivalist versus a progressive is also rooted in simply talking to people. Believe it or not, I mean, in this, it's ironic, right? I mean, in this world that we're so connected, we're never away from our devices. We're more connected than ever before. There's no real conversation going on. There's no listening. There's no deeper connection. And those that can try to do it, that's where the secret sauce lives. That's where, you know, if you're able to do it, I mean, the industry, not just print, but a lot of industry, and certainly most of them that were built in the industrial age, are all a derivative of what customers need. And what I mean by that is, they're going through self-discovery, and then they're coming and saying, okay, well, I need to print this piece, or I need to put out a social campaign or whatever it is. And then they go and they source those people and say, well, where do I find them? And And so that's, you know, there's a part of everybody's business that can play in that world, but it's the rat race. And so as opposed to, you know, I just want to have a deeper connection. I want to be close to them. I want to be in their inner circle. And so that's, in my opinion, where progressives live. They live in the inner circles of their clients. It's harder to get there, but that's once they're in there, it's a nice cozy place to be. Don't you think?
Yeah, it is. And you got to keep working at it to stay there. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, and you got to hustle and you got to listen. You got to be constantly, changing your game. It does take hard work, but that's okay. I mean, I think I was talking to somebody one time that said, you want to go where, in order to be highly successful, you need to go where 95% of the human population doesn't want to go, right? And put in the hard work and to do the things that the 95% don't want to do. And that takes hard work, that takes risk, that takes courage. It takes a whole lot of different things. It doesn't just take, waving a magic wand and for our industry, to be kind of critical at our industry, it doesn't take just buying a piece of equipment,
right?
That's all of a sudden going to magically generate all this business for you.
Right.
Right. But we get seduced into that thinking, right? I mean, it's a very attractive proposition to say, gosh, if I'm able to buy this one piece of equipment, or if I'm able to incorporate this new vertical, right, packaging into my business, all my problems are going to be solved,
Yeah.
That's a part of human nature. Wow, I could, that's all I got to do, and I'm all of a sudden I'm gonna make all this money. Okay, yeah, but it's as I said, it's seductive to follow that. But,
sure,
but that's what we and I'm not and that's in many industries. That's just, again, human nature. I can get more for less. About that expression. I can get more for less. It's like, okay, two for one. Okay, that kind of thing. I mean, yes, who doesn't want that? But we've kind of got to break that thinking and saying, look, it's not just that piece of equipment. It's not just that new vertical. I posted something the other day. I was kind of self-critical. I saw an article about how a printer bought a 3D printing technology, and now that's generated a great margin for that. My comment on my post was, that's great, but what happens when everyone else in your town gets a 3D printer?
Right.
What's going to happen then? Right. The commoditization that's occurred in the commercial print space is just going to happen in that space too, once everybody, gets that figured out.
Yeah.
So, the trick is, how do you not allow yourself to become a commodity? And that takes that hard work, that takes getting into that inner circle and becoming so valuable to your client, because you know more about your client than your client knows.
Well,
able to achieve that, status, then you truly become indispensable.
Right. And it takes letting go, right? I mean, it's letting go of your ego. Yeah. It's letting go of past breadwinners that could be product, could be people. I mean, there's a level of just letting go and embracing. Yeah. I always marvel, and you and I have talked about this before too, and that is that a lot of print service providers, marketing service providers, they'll, when you ask them, what verticals do you serve, they might give you an answer. Maybe they say, oh, it's I'm automotive or health and wellness or whatever it is. And when you dig deeper, you realize that in their minds, they say, yeah, we serve that vertical, but maybe it's because they have one client in it.
Right.
Serve a vertical, which is not necessarily my most favorite word, because everybody defines the same verticals, and heck, we have SIC codes for them. So I think that doing the hard work of serving a certain segment or world or community, that's the hard work you're talking about. That's the progressive work, and it's not easy, and because you do have to let go of the way you've always done things. So,
well, let's talk about that letting go. So let's just acknowledge that there are some forms of print that will disappear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have limited lifespan. There are some forms of print that will not be here in 5 years and in 10 years. You've got to let that go. But then you've got to figure out what will replace it. And there are things that will replace it. Print itself is not going to go away, but some forms of print may go away or may carry a less of an impact in our world. And so I think that you got to acknowledge that. And then the way of thinking, too, needs to change. It's like, how are you serving your customer? Are you serving your customer and saying, you know, I produce print for my customer? That's one way of thinking how you serve a customer. I'm serving my customer by producing a high-quality product for them. Or are you serving your customer by saying, I'm making through my product or my service, I'm making my client money,
mm-hmm.
okay, which is more valuable. And you know, if you're that client, do you want someone that's just producing a widget for me? Or do you want to do business with somebody that's actually making me money?
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Through that. And that is a different conversation. That's a different process. It's harder to achieve. Right. I mean, because as we kind of keep talking around this theme about really serving your client, in the highest and best possible way, and that's not, you know, if somebody were to come into my office today and said, you know, here I can produce something for you that you can then consume, I might say, okay, that's nice, you know.
Right.
Or if somebody can sit down with me and say, hey, listen, I'm going to produce something for you, and it's going to make you money.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who do I want to partner with?
Right, right, right. Absolutely.
Right? Who do I want to partner with? And that's a totally different way of thinking. Different way.
And you know, the beauty of our industry specifically is that, you know, we can talk about this and I'm sure there are people out there that even tire of the conversation, that they say, yeah, we got to change and we got to think differently and blah 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 blah. But it's not letting go of everything, right? I mean, it's essentially reminding you're already in there. You know, you've already got the annuity. You've already been so leverage who knows you. Leverage what you've done in the past to this new place. I mean, it's not like we're saying start from scratch. That's the thing that I think people get nervous about. And it's like, well, there's no. We're not saying throw everything away and then, all right, now just go out with a new thinking. No, you've got the annuity. You've got that already, that lever in there to think differently. Tell me about, so speaking of that, because you're living this. And so let's step back and do a little chronology of AP Tech and how it came to be. And, you know, because, I mean, that's a good thing, right? Because you're living it. You're not just sitting in some ivory tower pontificating. You're actually going through it as well.
Yeah, we are. We haven't just like the print industry. We have enjoyed the successes of the print industry for many years, and like the challenges that and opportunities facing the print industry. You know, we're not immune to those forces and effects. So a brief history, the association was started back in 1933. Ironically, it was started at the depths of the Great Depression.
Wow.
Right? I love doing this exercise. And there's actually a history book that I recite. At the depths of the Great Depression, when the outlook for the print industry was not good.
Right.
All right. That's our roots. Okay. And it's nice to kind of sort of juxtapose it against kind of the background of what we're facing today. And we started out as a organization solely for U.S. manufacturers of printing machinery. And over the years, we evolved. We added in new types of members, people that were more on the graphic arts supply side of the industry, and we developed a whole host of different programs to serve that OEM community, including we did a lot of advocacy, government affairs work. We did standards development work. We collected market data. We did some research. But what we were best and still are best known for was essentially serving as a sales channel for our members through trade shows and through trade show production. Okay. And over the years, we did print, Graph Expo, we did all these sorts of regional shows. That's changed too over the years because as the industry's changed and how manufacturers have gone to market, it became less of a sales function, much more of a marketing function, and even that's changed as the industry's changed. So that has now put us in a position today, 86 years later, to really say how can we best serve the industry? And we made some decisions last year to broaden our scope and to say it's the industry is bigger than just the manufacturers, of course. We need to be hearing from customers. So we've gotten printers much more involved in our organization. And we have stumbled upon this awareness that, the industry can be, just like any industry, you've got, again, the survivalists and the progressives. Mm-hmm. And, the survivalists, and we let people self-select. But what I'd say to the survivalists is there's nothing wrong with being a survivalist, but that's not the community that we choose to serve. Because the survivalist mentality is not a futuristic mentality. The progressive mentality is. And so we believe very much in the vitality of print as the industry writ large. We believe that the future lies, of course, with the progressives, the people that are going to look at serving their customers in a different way than they have in the past. And so there's a community there that we feel is not being served, and we will, we are building that community to serve them. And really what it's about, what motivates me is that there's, I believe passionately in a tactile experience, in a print experience, and that is so important from just a human perspective. Just part of what makes us human is the fact that we have the ability to touch and experience things in ways that other species can't, and we're able to communicate that in ways that other species can't, and print has always been an integral part of that.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a future for print, and there's a brave new world for print, and we feel like we can serve that community in a meaningful fashion.
So you've added. So one of the things that you've done is because. Everybody knew you as MPES, and now that you're the Association of Printing Technologies, certainly you still have OEM members, and obviously they've got a history with you, and as you've told me, they're pushing you guys to be more progressive as well, and that's a good thing. So you've got some really thoughtful members, but now you're adding printers. Traditionally called printers/marketing service providers.
Yep.
And,
Yeah.
And in fact, I know I'm going to be sitting with a couple in a couple weeks up in Minneapolis, but they're progressives, right?
Yes, they are progressives. And, I think that, where we see a great need is that the creative thinking around print and the development of these new a print that hasn't existed before. Okay, we have as an industry we have surrendered that responsibility to people that are unfamiliar with our industry.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were to walk into a creative agency or a marketing agency,
mm-hmm.
they don't have any experience or knowledge with print anymore.
Right.
Or if they do, it's limited. Okay? So who's really going to be responsible for coming up with new print that hasn't existed before? It's got to be us.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It has to be us. Why wouldn't it be us?
Right?
I mean, we're the brilliant minds behind developing the technology that really can do amazing things.
Mm-hmm.
You have printers out there who are truly creative when they want to be creative. They're not just manufacturers. Instead of sexy back, let's bring creativity back into this industry. And
right.
that's what I think is sort of a missing link we know there's that community out there, and progressives, we can call them progressives, maybe we call them creatives, maybe we call them innovators, just the people who want to think differently about print and actually want to bring those ideas into fruition and then take them and working with their customers and bringing this to life. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's bringing the creators of print together to create the future of print.
Yeah, and I think that's a really, really critical point. I mean, right, we've talked about mindset and all that kind of stuff and defining yourself by the client. But going back to that industrial-aged, competition-based model, the reality is that we don't necessarily create the demand for print. And that is the great thing to take away from this conversation and noodle on and remind not only the organization but all their people that we're sitting there waiting, we're supplying print, but the demand, as you say, is being created upstream. And the irony is that we have generations of graphic design students that know nothing about print. They're coming out, they're not being educated by print because it's being cut. They think, and in some cases, they're even intimidated by print. They think design is now all done on the web, that it's just, it's web design, and it's the truth.
Yeah.
And so it's funny because, obviously I'm kind of in that world, the creation of and demand for print. And when I throw jobs at our designers, I mean, they're just over the moon because it's like, oh my God, I get to design for print. I mean, it's become this amazing thing. And yet we have to, so the void that's been created by, How Design no longer does a magazine. You don't have the schools necessarily, as many of them teaching it. You don't have as many students. There's a void there. So where there's scarcity is opportunity. And we have this great opportunity across the board to go out and educate people not only about the impact that print makes, but everything else that they can do in a cross-functional campaign, a cross-channel campaign. So, and so what you're saying is you're now standing for those people that want to be demand creators and not only that, but you're going to help them and show them how to do it.
Yeah, and I think that this idea of demand creation, Mark, is not new, right? I mean, I've seen some manufacturers have invested a little bit in this effort where they try to go upstream. It's the holy grail right now. The industry is how do you attract the brands? We've been part of and we've seen projects that are built around demand creation, and those are all good. But I think what they've missed is that they try to kind of create one massive program and just expect that, demand generation will be created because of, we're writing case studies about how, a retailer, used direct mail and grew their, their business by X percent, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what it's really is going to take, it's not that easy. Right. So back to our earlier statement, if it were easy, then we wouldn't be doing this. It's hard. It's going to be hard to do this. And the way that we believe and the way that I'm seeing this unfold is we've got to begin by incubating at these communities of different people, these different groups. Right. It's got to start at this. It's a very grassroots type of effort. And so that's where it's going to start. I mean, and this is a marathon. This isn't going to be a sprint here, right?
Mm-hmm.
We can't expect that all of a sudden, you know, we're going to be able to educate a new generation overnight.
Yeah.
It's going to take some time, and it's going to take community building. It's going to take incubation. It's going to take, you know, bringing some really innovative and creative minds together in smaller group settings, just to begin to sort of, you know, germinate. You know, you got to be able to plant these seeds, and you know, the harvesting is going to come later.
Yeah.
But we've got to do it now. And again, not to be too critical of efforts that I've seen happen in the prior, it takes more than just publishing a case study on how great print is.
Right. You know,
that ain't going to move the needle.
Right. Exactly.
That's not going to move the needle.
Yeah, I agree.
It's connecting people, bringing them together, and then it's really shifting a mindset of an entire industry and of people now coming into this industry.
Right.
And that's, so, you know, it's a tall order. And while, you know, it's our ambition to do it, it would be fooling myself and you to say that we're going to be the only ones doing it. I think that there's many organizations out there that are going to work towards this goal. And so we'll do our part. We'll be that champion. We'll be that outlaw a little bit to kind of, you know, sometimes tell the industry not what it necessarily wants to hear, but what it needs to hear. And that's really our mission.
Sure.
Like coming up, it's, you know, you don't always in order to be successful, sometimes you need to hear stuff that you may not want to hear.
Right. Well, and it's nice and it's refreshing to hear that you know you're living what we were just talking about, and that is you can say, oh, there's other people that are doing it, and but you know, you're not focused on them. You're focused on serving the people that you serve and elevating them. So I really appreciate that. But let me, a couple things before I let you go. So
sure.
I could ask you the standard, what's your advice to the people out there, but I'm going to rephrase it, and I'm going to ask you what you've learned from coaching your son's baseball team. Because you and I have kicked this around before, but I mean, the kids offer the most wonderful analogy, and it's so applicable to this day. But as you're coaching the kids, you know, and you think about our industry and specific companies trying to change their mindset and get to a level of progressive. And before you answer, I mean, I'll go back and say, you know, you have to be a part survivalist to be a progressive, right? I mean, you can't be all survivalist, right? You can say, well, there's a part of me that has to, you know, even some of my business might be in survival mode to help me incubate the progressive stuff. But I just thought about it. And as we've talked before, what have you learned from coaching your kids that might be applicable to this whole thing?
Well, that's a great question. So my flip answer is you learn patience, because you're coaching a bunch of 8-9-year-olds, and so just being patient with them. I think the biggest thing I've learned is honestly more of a personal thing, Mark, if I can go there, and that is just keeping what you do in perspective.
Right.
You know, I mean, the most important things in life are not what you, so the most important thing in life is not to be defined in terms of what you do, but who you are.
Okay. Right.
I know that sounds very trite, but, I would much rather people remember me as somebody that helped a bunch of, you know, 9 and 10-year-olds really enjoy and appreciate the game of baseball.
Right.
Right. That, to me, you know, being known for that is a much more humble thing to be remembered for than, you know, some guy that just was the president of an association.
Right.
You know? And so I think that's what I get out of it.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, obviously kind of, there's something out there that's greater than me. And whether or not it's a religious or some other type of spiritual thing that you may or may not, and it's just you believe in, there's a greater good here. And that's what I'm always reminded of when I coach these kids through, you know, through some trying times.
Sure.
getting their attention. It's like there's a greater good here.
Yeah.
And the process is so much more important than the end product. You know, the first and foremost thing is I just want them to enjoy baseball. I don't want to be that guy that turns them off.
Right.
You know, I don't want them to have such a bad experience. I forget the winning and losing. It's the everyday coming to practice, you know, how you behave, how you interact with them. So,
I think it's actually great. It's good advice. And it's exactly what we're saying. And that is that you're focused on a bigger picture thing. It's a deeper connection. It is more spiritual. The irony in this noisy, digital age, this highly connected age when, you know, everything seems almost antiseptic is that if you can connect deeper, then you're going to have, you're out. The irony is you're going to have more wins than just focusing on the day-to-day wins. So, I think that's good. I think that's really good stuff. Before I let you go, last thing, and I just think this is awesome, and we'll do it again because maybe we'll do it after the show. We can kind of do some post-mortem on the show and sure. You know, maybe some things. But you need to shameless plug here. So I know the show is coming up, so I'm going to give you your chance here, a little shameless plug for Print 19.
Yeah, I mean, we're Print 19. It's coming back in Chicago October 3rd through the 5th. It's going to be different because what we're really using 2019 is going to be really setting us up for what we're really going to be doing in 2020. And what we're really focused on is bringing, you know, that creative and that progressive community together. And people think of a show where they just want to see lots of equipment. I think we'll certainly have that opportunity, but we really want to develop a community where people can come and share ideas. And that's what we want people to think of when they think about coming to Print 19. And then what we want people to think of AP Tech moving forward is that we're a forum for people to have a place to discover new ideas, discover new connections and really kind of incubate new and different thoughts. So that's my plug, October 3rd to the 5th. I think, you know, you'll get a flavor of that in Chicago.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, Thayer, I appreciate it, man. And you and I, we are going to continue our discussions, and we'll be together in a couple weeks. I really appreciate it. I thought this would be great. And I think that your insight, I'm excited for you guys. I think it's going to be a new chapter and a really fun chapter. And I appreciate you taking some of the time.
Thank you, Mark. I appreciate it and appreciate the invitation. See you in Minneapolis.
You got it, brother.
All right, man.
Talk to you soon.
Thanks. Bye.
Well, guys, I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Thayer Long, CEO of AP Tech. You can visit them at printtechnologies.org. They are the owners of Print 19, which is in Chicago at McCormick Place North on October 3rd through the 5th. It's going to be an amazing show this year. I think you'll agree that Thayer is a pretty thoughtful guy, and he is thinking deeply about our industry. He's got wonderful members to serve. It's fascinating to hear that he's, in fact, expanding his membership beyond just the OEMs and the suppliers to progressive printers. I've met a few, and it is a really, really cool new group that they are developing. I love some of the thoughts that he had around this new mindset and becoming a progressive versus a survivalist. I love the fact that he doesn't just pontificate this new mindset without respecting and understanding the traditions of our industry. And I think his message is, you know, to let go of some of it and embrace other parts of it. And it's really, really exciting. So I hope you enjoyed it. I certainly did. And we'll have him back on. A reminder that Brushstrokes is a podcast powered by Canvas Magazine. This episode was, in fact, brought to you by the Association for Print Technologies. And I hope to see you guys at the show, Print 19, October 3rd through the 5th in Chicago at the McCormick Place North. And until then, we will have some new fun podcast. And as always, be the buffalo.